Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Nation. Time for the C-Note. Spain has taken a 2-0 lead, as you heard. Pretty funny, right in the middle of Wolchuk's live spot there from Cosm. Spain scored. They just scored again, actually, but it was called back due to, you know, being like an inch offside. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's hard to score on Spain. I think the run could be over for France.
I'll tell you what's interesting, Dawson, in this match is how and I think it's like a little bit like basketball. And correct me if I'm wrong, is it called setting your line? They got their line set really high, like into the French side. France is having a hard time getting connected passes out of their end. And it just appears that Spain is got their line really – they're not letting France get any kind of buildup down the, you know, down the field. They are keeping them – pinned pretty solidly in their own end just by the way that they have their formation set up.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like at one of these water breaks or halftime, you can make an adjustment to your formation or your tactics and sort of come up with a solution. But France has not been able to do anything to alter the run of play in their favor. Tony Romo quoted from his appearance on the Pardon My Take podcast. He said his only regret is not winning the Cowboys a Super Bowl. Pretty dang good story. He iterates that he didn't want to play anywhere else after his time with the Cowboys because it just wouldn't have been the same. The quote, at the end, it was like, I could go somewhere else and do it because I was like, I got to win a Super Bowl. Nothing else matters. And it just was like, but would that be the same if I went somewhere else and did it? Because at that point, I'd known the game at such a high level. My last 20, 25 games were pretty successful when healthy, but I was getting injured more often. Body breaks down in some ways through the years. He says, I think it was as simple as it just wouldn't feel as important. It would be important to me, but it was for the people I was around and all the fans that we had. I thought that was a touching take from Tony and maybe endeared himself to the fans a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you live in a world where LeBron's willing to leave his hometown of Cleveland to go accomplish what he wants to accomplish, which is, hey, no harm, no foul. I get it. Legacies, all that kind of stuff, especially when you're supposed to be the greatest player to ever exist on the planet. But that's just an example of you even have a homegrown guy like LeBron who is willing to leave to go get his title, and for Romo to not want to do that. Yeah, I mean, I do think fans would appreciate that.
The injuries were such a big part of it, you know, and only he knows how fragile he felt. He did get hurt in 2015 and then 2016 preseason, you know, hurt again. It must have felt like I can't stay healthy. And as you're approaching your mid-30s, but, you know, I think other players, they come back from back-to-back injuries and they find health. And now he'd had the collarbone and other stuff early in his career. You know, maybe he wasn't going to be the most durable guy, but I would have loved to seen what that would have been like had it played out just in 2016.
I know.
You know, because Tony was amazing. Like, you go into 2014 and what they actually brought it down to like 29 passing attempts per game, and they were handing it to DeMarco Murray. And then you add Ezekiel Elliott, and instead of Tony's got to pass it 45 times and throw it for 350 yards so we can outscore this team, in 2016, they gave up just 19 points per game. Their offensive line was the best. Their run defense at 82 yards per game allowed was number one in the NFL. Like, they could run it, they could stop the run, and they had Tony Romo in the perfect spot still there with Beasley, Witten, and Dez. I think they would have had a better chance. You know, if hindsight's 20/20, they would have had a better chance than with Dak, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, I felt that way in real time. It was a giant argument amongst me and my friends, my brothers. We were getting into screaming matches at Thanksgiving because of it.
That's awesome.
I was pro throw Romo back in there. You've never seen a rookie quarterback go win a Super Bowl. If that's really what you want to do right now, then I would put Romo out there. And if he gets broken again, so what? You just trot Dak Prescott back onto the field. So, and then you saw the little glimpse of it in that Philadelphia game at the end of the season.
Oh, did you
when the
ever?
Hay was in the barn, it was like, okay, let's let Romo go out there. And it was just like a beautiful drive, matriculate and bang, touchdown.
He was surgical.
He was.
Is what he was. And I don't think he made the right decision. Like, I would have wanted to go play elsewhere. I think the Cowboys made the right decision in the long term. Like, we have a rookie quarterback. We feel like we've seen what Tony Romo can do at the height of his powers, and we want to go with the cheaper player that's going to reset our salary cap. And, you know, did they win 12 games that year?
Yeah, but I think, you know, in working at
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
.com at the time, there were people, like, if you look at how that locker room was, and two of Romo's best friends, Jason Witten and Dez Bryant, they basically... they turned away from Tony, and they said, hey, this young kid from Mississippi State gives us the best opportunity to maybe win this championship. And I think there was a point in time where even the people who were very, very loyal to Tony knew that there was no going back. Romo left. I remember this is my personal view. I remember – every day looking at the practice field from where I sat there at .com and never one time seeing Tony Romo out there. Not one time. And this is as he's rehabbing, never going out. The guys that were helping were Mark Sanchez, Kellen Moore. Those are the guys that were kind of – you never saw Tony Romo involved in anything that they were trying to do. And I think at that point in time – yeah, he was doing rehab stuff and all that, but not even making any of appearances at all.
Yeah,
and
not being a good teammate.
Not being a good teammate. And then Tony kind of tried to rally everybody and like, hey, let's come over and you know, come over to my house and hang out and do all that. And guys are like, nah, man, we're good.
It was too late.
It was too late.
His Dak's team
lost the locker room.
He had totally lost the locker room.
And from the front office and the coaching perspective, you're considering that heavily?
Yeah.
I think you have to.
I think that Romo, from what I understood, he was taking, like, he was coming by Garrett's office and putting, like, sticky notes on his chair, you know, about things and stuff like that. And he kind of said, hey, it's a good opportunity for, you know, he kind of made that whole speech. He made that speech, you know, in front of the media at the podium there.
The meritocracy speech.
Yeah. He made that speech and like, nobody's like, no, why are you doing this? Bro, why do you feel necessary to do this? And yeah. So he had already, that train had left the station. Like I say, Dez was out, Witten was out. Basically, the team was out because they like Tony had.
And that's part of Dak's leadership ability and the qualities of him as a human, you know, that he had sold them on following his lead. And we interviewed Jason Witten. I don't know if it was later on that year or at camp, but he said Dak stepped right into that huddle day one. And even as he was, I'm adding some commentary here, but even as Dak was struggling as a practice player, he had the utmost confidence and command of the huddle as he's airmailing and can't quite figure out the offense in the first couple of weeks of training camp. And it wasn't until the preseason game started where he proved that he could actually do amazing stuff in any NFL setting. And, you know, the perfect passer ratings and then obviously the start to that season created an incredible amount of momentum. I was always surprised, though, that Tony didn't want the opportunity in Houston or Denver. because as free agency started, I assumed he's gonna try to reignite his career. But the TV money came in, Brian.
The TV money was way too good. But also, I don't think Tony Romo wanted to go and learn a new offense, even though that he is an extremely bright guy and all. I don't think he wanted to have to pick up and go do all that again. So listen, I sound like I'm being very, very critical of Tony Romo. I just know working in that building and talking to people every single day and in my own eyes observing who was trying to help Dak Prescott and who was trying to help the team. And it wasn't Tony. It was, you know, Tony was nowhere to be found. And I just think that was a big thing. But I think also, too, like you were asking, I just don't think he wanted to go learn another offense or go try and execute another offense.
Yeah, and then just cross your fingers you stay healthy.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, you have the TV money on the table.
He had like two young kids probably by then.
Yeah.
You know, his sons are young and wanting him around the house. But it was $20 million.
Yeah, $20 million, and he likes to golf.
Yeah. So it made sense for him for a lot of reasons to pivot in that way. Pat Thorman retweeted one of the stories that was recapping this Tony Romo interview on Pardon My Take, and he pointed out that the Cowboys failed him instead of the other way around.
Sure.
During Romo's 9 years, the Cowboys' defense ranked higher than the offense in scoring once.
Yeah.
That year they won a playoff game. Their average rank in points allowed was 19th. They didn't start rebuilding their offensive line until halfway through his tenure. And I think similar things could be said about Dak's supporting cast.
Yes.
As you know, they're both being asked to carry a team that is team building in a way that, you know, targets the playoffs instead of building the absolute best roster. Like when Jerry first took over the team and they needed to get over the hump, they were like, let's go get Charles Haley, let's go get Deion Sanders. You know, now they're like, let's get D Winners and Jalen Thompson, you know, and right. There's just such a huge difference. The Rams are what the Cowboys used to be. Oh, Myles Garrett's available. Trent McDuffie's available. Let's get some of the guys who are the best at their position. We got Krusty's Corner coming up next. Brian, where are you taking us?
Yeah, I've got some, once again, got some thoughts as we get ready for training camp. I'll get the opinions of my guys. We'll do that next.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.